This show's a daily contest to see who's dumber.
You ain't got no class like me, man. I'm an aristocrat.
We apologize. This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
They're not like us. They're not like us. They're not like us.
This isn't the Oprah Winfrey Show. My feelings don't matter.
Mark Hockman.
I have this fantasy of becoming obese and bedridden and having people bring me food.
What's your favorite pasta? The gabagool?
Channing Crowder.
I just got an insufficient funds text. I might not be able to buy no beer tonight. I lost my virginity watching Bill dance.
Google me, bro.
Alejandro Solana.
So Billy the Marlin isn't a bird? I'm basically a professional kayaker.
Sports.
I used to hang out with Chris Volstead.
Okay.
I would just like to confirm I am wearing underwear today.
You know what else is great all the time, doesn't matter what the scenario? Bagpipes.
Finish your damn string cheese.
Jimmy Jewelry.
More sports.
Come on, repeat after me.
Here comes the Blackfoot.
The most sports.
Jimmy, you've never had an injury?
No. I stretch.
The Hockman and Crowder extravaganza begins now.
Happy Game Above Sports Bowl Day. Pittsburgh and Toledo, huh? 2 o'clock kickoff during the show. We got a little over 49. Day after Christmas bowl game. We got three of them today. I mean, what could be better? Besides everything. Josh Appel in for Hawk, Crowder, and Solana again today. But Steven Gonzalez is in the studio, and Jimmy is in the studio today.
I'm here. We got Jimmy.
I mean, it's the time of our lives. Slowly but surely, the regular cast and crew of the Hawk and Crowder show are trickling their way back in. Solana just couldn't stay away. He will join us at 3:20. Because unless you're living under a rock in South Florida and you've missed things, well, I mean, I guess you might have been busy with family yesterday, but some news with Jimmy Butler and the Heat. Pat Riley just put out a statement. We'll get to that in a moment, but Solana will join us and talk about that. He's also hosting Pre-Heat, as he always does, for Heat game days. They tip off at 7 o'clock tonight, but he will join us at 3:20. We'll also talk to Alex Dono in the 2 o'clock hour. Dono, you know him plenty from these airwaves, but he's also the host of Locked On Canes, and he will join us to talk Coach L, the Pop-Tarts Bowl as well, and Canes football. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have Cameron Wolf from NFL Network. He'll join us, talk NFL MVP race, some Dolphins, and really all the stuff going on around the league. The last time I spoke with you guys was Tuesday, and this was pre-Hawaii Bowl. And guess what? I sit here today, Thursday, December 26th, 2024, as a Hawaii Bowl champion.
That was a great read.
Let's go.
Right?
I mean,
well, it was a great read for a while, and then it wasn't, yeah. And then it was a great read.
You had to sweat it out.
It wasn't a sweat-free read. That was the ultimate sweat. I had USF plus three, was telling you the whole time, the whole show, and then USF couldn't do anything in the second half. They had an 11-point lead at halftime. They come back in the fourth quarter. They can't do anything. 2 minutes left. Coach calls timeout, only to punt. That gamble pays off. They go to overtime, and they go into the two-point shootout, which means you're guaranteed the USF plus three. So we, as a show, and as former... Well, I'm not former. I am a USF alum. We are Hawaii Bowl champions in 2024. It feels great. It really does.
You get to wear the Leia around your neck now.
Yeah. Well, they didn't give me one. I mean, I wear it in my head and in my spirit.
I mean, you could have got it.
If you're wondering.
You could have gone at Party City before it closes down, you know?
Nah. I wouldn't want to go and make some time to go to Pity. Get it, Party City, pity. I did take the over 49 in this Toledo-Pittsburgh game, and I just now learned, as they were kicking off, that Pitt's quarterback is making his first career start. So I'm sure this will go well for me. We'll find out together, though, because we'll be on the air probably when this game ends. All right, so Alex Dono, like I said, will join us in the 2 o'clock hour. He'll talk some Coach Larinaga. We'll talk some Canes football as well. Coach Larinaga announcing today that he's going to step down as the head coach of the University of Miami basketball program. Most winningest coach in Canes basketball program history. He actually just gave some quotes to Michelle Kaufman. He said, quote, quite frankly, I'm exhausted. Said he tried every which way to make this work, but the NIL demands change of profession. Said he was shocked when eight players bolted after the Final Four. He also said that he had an agent call him up and say, quote, you can get involved with a kid for $1.1 million. And Larinaga was not having a lot of that. So we'll talk to Alex Dono about Coach Larinaga's situation. We've also got a great best of clip from a couple of years ago during their Final Four run, I think, where Hawk was still annoying Coach L about his Wordle scores. Now, if you want to look on the bright side, more time for Wordle for Coach L. Right before we got on the air, by the way, mentioned the Jimmy Butler saga with the Heat. I think a lot of people owe Shams Charania an apology. But Pat Riley put out the rare statement commenting on rumors. He's not a guy that normally does that. Doesn't address those things publicly. But my Heat president, Pat Riley, issued this statement on Jimmy Butler. Quote, we usually don't comment on rumors, but all this speculation has become a distraction to the team and is not fair to the players and coaches. Therefore, we will make it clear we are not trading Jimmy Butler.
Well, then do we owe Shams an apology?
Yes, Shams is not making up these reports. And I appreciate the job that Bernie Lee, Jimmy Butler's agent, has to do in shooting down these rumors. But Shams Charania is not out here making stuff up for the fun of it. If he is, that's damaging his credibility. Now, that article, people, the apologists have tried to play semantics here. It's possible for Jimmy Butler to prefer a trade and also be okay with finishing out the season here. And it's possible for him to prefer a trade without having formally requested one. So this idea that these things can't coexist doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I don't think is right. But for now, Pat Riley saying the Heat aren't going to trade Jimmy Butler. And we'll talk to Solana about this in the 3 o'clock hour. I'm looking at some of these rumors and the teams involved. I don't see how a trade to the Suns taking on Bradley Beal's contract, how that appeals to the Heat at all. I think, like, if I'm the Heat, really the only thing I'd want to do, I know that you don't want to lose him for nothing, but I'd rather, if I'm the Heat, just get out of that contract after this season and be able to reset from there without having to take on another contract match from somebody else. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I don't think this is the last we've heard of this, but we will talk with Solana about that in the next segment. I also want to get to this Lamar Josh Allen MVP race that has heated up again all of a sudden. Oh, Toledo touchdown. We 42 points after the extra point away from hitting our over. A great start.
That was quick.
Game above Sports Bowl. What'd you say, Jimmy?
That was quick.
Yeah. Toledo, the Rockets. I mean, who doesn't love the Toledo Rockets?
Not UM.
But, Steven, what do you think here with Jimmy? You're wearing your Heat culture shirt. You know, it feels like this is how Jimmy Butler's tenures in his previous stops, this is how they all end. You've got a good run in there. You reach a ceiling. Everybody kind of sees the writing on the wall. And then the breakup happens. And it feels like we're in that middle part of the breakup process between the Heat and Jimmy Butler. Whether or not it eventually happens during the season or after the season, it just feels like it's going to happen. Where do you stand on all
Unfortunately,
this?
It does look like what we've seen in the past with other stops in the Jimmy Butler train. But I don't see any packages that make any sense for the Heat. I really don't. Right. I'm with you. I think we ride it out to the end of the season. It's not like this season is going, it might not be going as well as we would have hoped this early, but I do think that we're in a pretty decent spot with some guys that can really play, and I would like to see them play it out. If we lose them, we lose them at the end of the year, but it really makes no sense just to clear the money a little quicker and get a package in return where this year gets compromised because of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the clean break maybe at the end is could be their best option. But at the same time, like, you want to get value and something back for Jimmy Butler. It's just I don't think that it's beneficial for the Heat to take on a Bradley Beal type contract and be locked into that and give them even less flexibility going forward. Before we get to headlines, it is National Candy Cane Day. And Hawk and I went to lunch, maybe the saddest lunch I think I've ever had.
Oh, no.
I don't think there's any place on earth more sad than a Hooters at 11:30 a.m. the day after Christmas. That's where Hawk and I went to lunch today.
Wow. I mean, the day after Christmas as a whole, like, I don't see people on the streets. I think people are just in right now. They're just home.
Not Hawk and I.
We were in
Bing's. Hawk had his chili, a couple of Pepsis. I mean, it was the time of our lives, but it was also very sad. And we were talking about it being National Candy Cane Day. And I'm going to ask every single guest we have on today their takes on candy canes. Because I feel like candy canes are only good for, like, a decoration and making things look a little better. I don't find the process of eating a candy cane enjoyable. Any candy that makes my fingers sticky from holding it or eating it, I'm out on.
And they come with that little wrapper that it seems like it's airtight. It's hard to peel that paper.
I'm glad you brought up the wrapper on the candy cane. Because if I have to do work and keep the wrapper on the piece of candy while I eat it, I'm out on that candy. I shouldn't have to protect myself in the process of eating a sweet. I just shouldn't.
Yeah.
So I'm out on candy canes.
They could come up with a better way to package a candy cane.
Is there, though? It's like Hawk made the equivalent, made the comparison to a fish hook, and how that just, like, the idea, I don't know, the shape of it.
The shape isn't, like, comfortable either.
If you want the taste of a candy cane, just have a mint.
Correct.
Eat a mint.
Yeah.
I will say that the TikTok account of the candy cane store maker or whatever, now that's cool. I love the process of watching how a candy cane is made.
It is cool. I have seen some.
And
of those.
I like,
it's nice.
I like how the decorations look when people use them as decorations. But that's where my appreciation for candy canes end. I'm out on eating them. I'm out on holding them. I'm out on candy canes. Happy National Candy Cane Day. Somebody texts in, peppermint candy canes suck, but they've got some good flavors. That might be true, but I've still got to hold on to that plastic and unwrap it. And then it, like, gets your lips, the color of whatever the candy cane is.
Yeah, that's another thing. You got to stay home after you eat a candy cane.
Yeah, out on a candy cane. Out on a candy cane. And we will make sure we ask every single one of our guests today, Alex Donahue in the next segment, Solana in the 3 o'clock hour, and Cameron Wolf of NFL Network, their thoughts on candy canes on National Candy Cane Day. But before we do that, and before we get to Alex Donahue in the next segment, let's hear from Stephen Gonzalez and today's headlines.
All right, headlines brought to you by Doral Kia. At Doral Kia, choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. Busy day in sports. It was a busy day yesterday. Also, Christmas Day football on Netflix. The Chiefs win over the Steelers 29-10. They clinch the first round bye and home field advantage with the W. Travis Kelce passes Tony Gonzalez for first place all-time in Chiefs touchdowns for a tight end. The Ravens win against the Texans 31-2. Lamar Jackson moves into first all-time in career rush yards by a quarterback over Michael Vick.
By the way, way more embarrassing to lose a game 31-2 than it is to lose a game 31-0. And it's not even fun to lose a game 31-2 because you think, all right, maybe we've got a chance at a scoregami. Well, that score's happened twice before. Yeah. So it was really the worst of all worlds yesterday for the Texans, and we'll get to more on that later with Cameron Wolf of NFL Network.
Yep, tonight we got the Seahawks versus the Bears from Soldier Field in Chicago. Some interesting news here. Former Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll interested in the Bears head coaching vacancy at the end of the year. Possible comeback for Pete Carroll.
Did you see Mike Florio and Adam Schefter going at it over this story over the weekend? Yesterday?
I saw something that they were going back and forth. I didn't really look into it, though.
basically Florio accused Schefter of carrying water for Carroll's agent, and Carroll's agent playing Adam Schefter by giving him the story and Schefter reporting it. And Schefter clapped back by saying, "That's not true. Why would you do that?"
Man, credibility is just out the window lately. NBA Christmas Day did not disappoint. Average winning margin across all five games yesterday was only 5 points. It's the narrowest average winning margin on Christmas Day in NBA history when they play five or more games on that day. LeBron James had some choice words for the NFL yesterday after last night's win versus the Warriors, saying, "I love the NFL, but Christmas is our day." I'm sure NFL fans have a thing or two to say about that.
Listen, ratings were up. Overnight ratings were up for the NBA with the games yesterday, and I thought that was really interesting considering the NFL was kind of diabolical putting their, not kind of, they were diabolical putting these games on Netflix.
Yeah.
Meaning you couldn't flip back and forth between the NFL and the NBA game. So you were either locked in on one or you had multiple screens, but NBA ratings overnight, vast improvement from a year ago.
Pretty good, pretty good. Luka Doncic expected to miss an extended period of time for the Mavericks with a calf strain. Tough blow for Dallas yesterday. Jimmy Butler reportedly prefers a trade out of Miami by the February 6th trade deadline. Pat Riley did confirm today that they would like to keep Jimmy Butler in Miami. Miami Heat take on the Orlando Magic tonight from the Kia Center in Orlando, 7 p.m. Pre-game coverage will start right here after our show at 5:45 p.m. on 560 WQAM. Hurricanes basketball coach Jim Larrañaga will step down immediately after 14 seasons with the program. Canes are currently sitting at 4-8 and are off until January 1st. We got three bowl games today, Pittsburgh and Toledo, going on right now. As we spoke about, the Game Above Sports Bowl from Ford Field in Detroit. Rutgers will take on Kansas State at 5:30 p.m. in the Rape Bowl from Chase Field in Arizona. And Arkansas State will take on Bowling Green at 9 p.m. in the 68 Ventures Bowl in Alabama. The Canes will take on Iowa State in the Pop-Tarts Bowl Saturday, 3:30. You can catch all the action right here on 560 WQAM. Game will take place in Orlando at Camping World Stadium. A lot on the line there with the Toaster Trophy. Know that
so it, we will break that down with Alex Dono in the next segment. Don't you worry.
And the Cats, they're off till Saturday, where they'll take on the Montreal Canadiens at 1 p.m. on home ice at Amerant Bank Arena. That takes us to our weather, sponsored by the Mesman and Dover Law Firm, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24/7, 866-954-MORE. Your weather outside is 79 degrees. 9 mile an hour winds, 63% humidity. Seems like there's no rain in the forecast projected for the rest of the day.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you, Steven. Coming up next, Alex Dono. You know him, you love him. He'll join us next, talk some Canes here on Hawk and Crowder.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
Jimmy, you think we should play Noche de Sixto today?
Absolutely.
Hawk and Crowder.
Welcome back to Hawk and Crowder. Appel in for Hawk, Crowder, and Solana. Steven is in the studio. Jimmy is in the studio as well. And now we're happy to be joined by a very familiar voice, Alex Dono. Your QAM, Locked on Canes, Locked on ACC podcast. You can find those on the Odyssey app or wherever else you find your podcast. He's joining us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms. At Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Dono, thank you for taking the time. Hope you had a great Christmas.
Appel, I'm glad to be here, my friend. I had an awesome Christmas. My six-year-old son has been so hopped up on all the candy and desserts. He's just been like running into walls all day. So I'm happy you could pull me away from parenting for a little bit to talk some Miami Hurricanes.
Well, it's my pleasure to do that. I'm glad you brought up the candy, because it is National Candy Cane Day. We were talking about it a little in the first segment. Generally speaking, what are your thoughts on candy canes? Before we get to the unimportant stuff, let's start with the important take on candy canes.
I think candy canes are really only for decoration. I don't think I've ever actually enjoyed consuming a candy cane. Like I've never consumed a candy cane and felt this is really satisfying. I'm not a big fan of peppermint to begin with. Like, there are certain other kinds of mints I can roll with. Peppermint is not one of them. I'm not really a fan of hard candy to begin with, and that's essentially what the candy cane is. So I feel like the value of the candy cane decorations, make your house look festive, make your Christmas displays have a little red and white flair. But, you know, on actual edible candy canes, I have zero interest in them whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're in agreement on this, and that's why you're the perfect guest for this show. We just see eye to eye on a lot
of things. I can do the rest of the interview now.
By the way, Locked On Canes, not Locked On Candy Canes. That's a terrible dad joke. You're welcome.
It's pretty good, actually.
Feel free to use that. Feel free to use that. Let's shift our attention to the big UM news of the day, which is obviously Coach L stepping down as the head coach of the men's basketball program. What are your thoughts on that whole situation? The news seems to be a surprise to a lot of people.
It was definitely a surprise to me, really based on the timing, because they're 12 games into the season. You know, they're getting into the, you know, post New Year ACC heavy part of the schedule here starting on January 1st. So, yeah, I mean, any time you hear about a coach deciding to retire 12 games into a season, it's odd. Like, I thought it was odd just a few weeks before the season started when Tony Bennett, the former Virginia coach, retired pretty abruptly. This is even more abrupt than that, because, like, you know, Bennett retired at least prior to the season starting. Coach L retires during the season, and there are also similarities between the reasons why Coach Bennett and Coach Larrañaga just retired. I mean, Coach L just finished up a press conference a few minutes ago, and, you know, he noted, of course, he loves the University of Miami. I mean, gosh, he had so much success here. But in terms of, you know, reasons why he decided to step away, like he mentioned, he's exhausted. And that really all has to do with the way college basketball has changed, Josh, over the last several years. I mean, we have so many conversations about, you know, in the football context of transfer portal and NIL, and all of that stuff applies to basketball as well. And in some cases, basketball seems to be even crazier at some times. Here's a quote that John Rothstein put out on his X account from Coach L a few minutes ago on what was kind of the turning point for Coach L when he started to consider his retirement. And Coach L said, after we went to the 2023 Final Four, eight players wanted to transfer or seek better NIL deals. They told me they loved it at Miami, but they wanted to seek a better deal. And Coach L also talked, Josh, about how it's become a normal thing. He'll have conversations with, you know, agents, because your players have agents now. It used to be only a thing that pros had. And the agent was like, well, hey, maybe if you can up your offer to $1.1 million, something like that, we'll be willing to have a discussion. And it's just, you know, obviously Coach L's been doing this a long time. He's 75 years old. This is not the brand of college basketball he's been coaching for the last five decades, whatever it's been. So I guess he just decided, and I don't think he woke up this morning and had the, I'm sure he's been kind of marinating on this for a while, but I guess today was the day he ultimately decided it was time to, you know, find something else to do. Enjoy your golden years.
Yeah, they've been really struggling this year. 4-8 to start the year, just lost in overtime in their last game to Mount St. Mary's. Going back to last year, they've lost 18 out of the last 22. It's just finishing last year on a 10-game losing streak. The timing, I think you're right, is the most odd thing, because it's clear that this was something that was on his mind and something he wanted to do. And I guess it's also a tough spot for the university, right? Coach L is the most successful coach in the history of this program. He's brought them to heights that, again, not many people thought this program could reach. I mean, think about six NCAA tournaments, four trips to the Sweet 16, first Elite Eight, first Final Four, the one that you mentioned. He also brought George Mason to a Final Four before he came to UM. I mean, this is one of the more accomplished college basketball coaches, honestly, like, for that level ever, and for the Canes, their best ever. So you don't want to force him out after last year. You want him to be able to come to that decision on his own. So all that being said, and this is the classic generalizing question, but what's his legacy at UM? Obviously, it is 99.9% positive with this finish. You know, nobody's going to think about how it ended. They're going to think about the NCAA tournaments, the Sweet 16s, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four. So what is his legacy in your mind at UM?
I mean, to me, he's the best basketball coach the University of Miami has ever had. And you know, I see, you know, you say 99.9% is positive. It might only be about 95%, or maybe it's just like the loud people on social media. Like the negative opinions right. tend to be louder than the positive ones, because I see a bunch of people like, oh, it's about time. The team is terrible. He needed to step away. But I think Coach L's career, I mean, the real ones appreciate what he accomplished here already. And I think everyone else, I think his career at Miami is going to age very well, because, I mean, you mentioned it, Final Four run less than 2 years ago, multiple Elite Eight runs. None of those things that ever happened. Like Miami's ceiling prior to Jim Larrañaga's arrival was a Sweet 16 appearance. Like literally no one had ever brought Miami basketball to the great heights that Jim Larrañaga brought us to. I mean, the only goal I guess he fell short of was not literally winning a national championship, but the college basketball fans all know how rare and how difficult a Final Four run is, unless you're, you know, Duke over however many years in UConn. Right. A Final Four run is not easy. And Coach L, like he raised the standard and he changed the game, because prior to Jim Larrañaga getting to Miami, there were some very lean years under Frank Haith and Perry Clark. Prior to that, I mean, Leonard Hamilton prior to Perry Clark was the one who literally resurrected the basketball program, because Miami had dropped basketball in the 80s. Yeah. And then the program came back and Leonard Hamilton had some success laying the foundations. He had a Sweet 16 run around 99, 2000, something like that, if my dates are right on that. And then, you know, but they hadn't really had any sort of sustained success until Jim Larrañaga got here. And he made Miami basketball a player. And you talk about what the coaching search is going to look like. I think they're going to be aggressive. You know, they do have an interim coach now, Bill Courtney, who is on Jim Larrañaga's staff. I don't think they're going to keep him as the head coach. I think they're going to start whatever the appropriate time to start that is. Maybe they'll already start kicking the tires, but I think Miami is going to try to land a proven head coach, maybe a relatively big name. And I think that's what they're going to look at, because you want to try and maintain or build back the greatness that Coach L established here.
You mentioned what Miami's perspective might be on the coach that they want to go after, someone that's a name, someone that's established. I think one of the great things about this Larrañaga tenure is that when he leaves it, despite what the record looks like now, he leaves it as a job that, at least in my eyes, is still a very desirable one. Do you think that nationally, for candidates that are going to look at this job, that they'll be able to talk with and potentially hire one of the hot names that's out there?
I would like to think so. You know, not only did Coach Larrañaga kind of raise the profile of this job, because, I mean, anyone can look and say, hey, this team made multiple Elite Eights and a Final Four. Like, this has been a legitimate program in recent years. I also think that the leadership at Miami is really trying to, and, you know, Joe Echevarria, the new university president, has only been on the job officially for a couple of months now. But he is very much an athletic-minded university president. Like, some of the presidents during Miami's history, the university presidents, have been, you know, academics that you've kind of had to fight against, tug of war between athletics and everything else. Joe Echevarria is very much in line with athletics. And, you know, Dan Radakovich, you know, Miami brought him in from Clemson a few years ago. And that's a very serious athletic department. So I don't think they're going to leave any stone unturned. And then you also have the ACC factor. I mean, I know that right now, the ACC is not very well represented in the top 25, so you can call this a down year or whatever. But the ACC, that's the prestige conference when it comes to basketball. So an open ACC job at what is becoming, you know, an even more serious athletic program than it's been in recent years, and a more serious basketball program, I would like to think Miami's going to be an attractive spot. Like, maybe they wouldn't be going after the same kind of coaches that, you know, the UConns and the Dukes and the North Carolinas of the world go after when they have coaching vacancies. But Miami should be somewhere maybe a notch or a half notch below that at this point.
And I would imagine the NIL collective for the basketball program is relatively competitive. We know what the resources that are involved with the football program. But, you know, Coach L made the comment about the $1.1 million offer that someone was chasing to come play for the program. If you could, is the NIL collective for the basketball program, is that competitive enough?
I believe it is. I mean, I don't believe Jahlil Bethea would be on the team if it wasn't. You know, Miami made a play for the Boozer Twins. It came down to Duke versus Miami. So I think there's no question they're competitive. And I'm glad you brought that up, Josh, because, you know, when people hear some of the comments and see some of the comments that Coach L made today, maybe one of the reactions someone could have is, oh, that must mean he's worried about Miami's NIL situation. No, I just think Coach L doesn't like NIL, period. Like, it's not a matter of Coach L saying, hey, Miami doesn't have the money to attract good players. I think Coach L now realizes college basketball has become almost completely transactional. You know, he's made a career over the past 50 plus years of doing it a certain way when it comes to building relationships, not only building relationships with recruits, but also building relationships with players who are in your program and developing them. Because now, you know, when players are at a risk of transferring every single season, like, development doesn't come into play the same way. That's why I say basketball is probably even crazier than football, because if you've got a really, really good player, he's probably either going to be a one and done, or he might transfer somewhere else the next year. Like, in football, it's hard to keep certain players for more than a year or two. In basketball, it's hard to keep anybody good for more than a year. So I don't think Coach L is frustrated with Miami's NIL situation. I just think he's frustrated with NIL, period, and transfer portal and what the game's become. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the Canes Connection Collective, which I support, you know, people think about that with football, but they also are involved in basketball as well. I think Miami is strong there, and I think Miami is going to continue to try and fortify that, because, again, this day and age, we're seeing NIL, even compared to 2 years ago, becoming even more prominent than it used to be.
Well, it's the end of an era with Jim Larrañaga as the head coach of the Canes basketball program. Let's shift gears to the football program. They've got a massive, massive bowl game coming up on Saturday in Orlando, playing for a real live toaster in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Donald told me before he came on with us that he had what kind of Pop-Tart before?
I had a strawberry frosted Pop-Tart because my son used to like them, and then like a week ago he decided he doesn't like Pop-Tarts. He's a kid. He goes on from thing to thing. But we had all these extra boxes of strawberry and I like them. So I've been eating strawberry frosted Pop-Tarts for breakfast, and especially you know, I do a moment of silence when I eat one the last couple days, because I'm getting ready for a big Pop-Tart bowl, and I'm glad I can show my support for that Pop-Tart bowl. And I would love to win that trophy if I can get a replica of that, because I use a conventional toaster for my Pop-Tarts, but how much more fun would it be to be able to toast my strawberry frosted Pop-Tart in the actual trophy for the game?
So you pop your you toast your Pop-Tarts?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, I've never done that.
Really?
Yeah, never. I just eat them out of the bag.
It definitely adds. I mean, you can eat them out of the bag, but out of the bag, they're just, there's something about the little bit of crispiness that you get when you pop it in the toast. I highly recommend it. I mean, if you're bringing your Pop-Tart on the go, then, you know, it's okay to eat it regular, but the toaster definitely adds something.
I'll have to give it a go next time I choose to partake in the Pop-Tart. We've been doing s'mores Pop-Tarts in the Appel household recently.
That's fancy.
Yeah, pretty good.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were my favorites growing up, were the s'mores.
Love the s'mores Pop-Tarts. Cam Ward said he was going to play in this game. Is that still the case? And really, what does he have to gain by playing in this game?
Yeah, he has said it, and he has confirmed it several times this week that he's going to play in the game. You know, you say that, you phrase that in a very pragmatic way. Like, what do you have to gain to play in this game? The funny thing about Cam Ward is he doesn't have an agent right now. I'm sure he's going to acquire one before the NFL draft. But usually, like, the people who get in players' ears are like, hey, why would you play in this bowl game? That usually comes from your agent. Like, Cam Ward doesn't have an agent right now. So, you know, the decision makers, primarily himself. He also gets input from his family. He's very close with his parents. And I think the reason why Ward is going to play in this game is he really wants to follow through on the commitment that he made to come to Miami. I think he takes it very seriously to finish the job that he started here. And obviously, we're all disappointed that that's, for as much as we love Pop-Tarts, we're all disappointed that the end of the line for him is the Pop-Tart Bowl and not a college football playoff. But I think Ward just really wants to set the example for his teammates that he's about more than just the next thing. And he, it's important to him to play in this game. And also, Ward's love for football, it's like, it's very, and I mean this as a compliment, it's like a very childlike love for foot. Like, he just enjoys going out there and playing the game. I mean, football, I think football and fishing are the only two things that he has interest in. Everything else takes a backseat to that. So, you know, he doesn't have, you know, an agent that's begging him not to play in there. I just think he decided, I want to do this one more time, because also he's got a bad taste in his mouth from the way that regular season ended. I mean, that Syracuse game where he played great, it wasn't his fault
right.
they lost that game, but that left a bad taste in his mouth, and I think he wants to go out on a positive note.
Before we, because I want to ask you what you think Miami ends up doing as far as replacing Cam Ward next year, but you know, you mentioned how he wants to finish what he started, but obviously the Pop-Tarts Bowl is not where they expected to be. You bring up the Syracuse game. I have a hard time assessing this Canes season, because on one hand, they won 10 games, they had a Heisman candidate at quarterback, and on the other hand, they won 10 games, had a Heisman candidate at quarterback, and they missed the college football playoff. They didn't make the ACC championship game. So it's not that they had a bad season. Obviously, you don't win 10 games in a bad season, but it just still feels like a disappointment despite all of that. I'm assuming that that is generally how you feel as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In many cases, not to say the offense was perfect, but it was the number one offense in college football this year. The defense was really what let this team down on too many occasions. I mean, you know, yeah. Basically, you felt like in a lot of these games, you think about the comeback wins that they did have against the odds against Virginia Tech, where they came down from behind big against Cal. They were down 25 points in the second half. You know, you shouldn't necessarily have to win 40 or more points just to win a game, but that was the case a lot for Miami this year. I think there are some very surprising regressions on the defensive side of the football. You know, I thought I expected the linebacker play to be more consistent this year, because, you know, Kiko Maoi-Noa as a junior was really one of the top linebackers in the country. Not to say he had a bad season this year, but he missed a lot of tackles compared to what he was used to. Miami's defensive secondary was an absolute mess. It's why that's a unit that they're really looking to revamp this offseason. They've already brought in two DB transfers, Zechariah Poyser and Branch Charles Brantley, who's a cornerback. They brought in a new defensive lineman, David Blay. So because the defensive line, a lot of talent on that unit, but didn't produce the consistent hurries and sacks that we thought they would. So it was really a collective failure in a lot of areas of the defense. And I know people can you know, maybe pick apart the offense at certain times. How come you weren't better at running the clock down? Maybe you should have run the football a little bit more when you're up 21 points against Syracuse. You know, how come Xavier Restrepo had a costly fumble in one of your biggest games? Like, you can nitpick certain things with the offense, but still, you've got an offense that literally ranks number one in the country in total offense, number one in scoring offense. You shouldn't have to score 40 points every game to win. So, as you know this, Josh, from calling all these games, if you're not playing complimentary football, you can run into a lot of trouble. So unfortunately, the offense had to bail out the defense a lot this year, and the defense didn't bail out the offense enough.
You just think what could have been if the defense had just merely been okay.
Yeah.
This season, instead of, you know, what they resembled at the end of the season. Last one for you here. I know the Canes obviously are probably going to have to go into the portal to replace Cam Ward. I know they have Emery Williams on the roster already. I'm not sure what their confidence level is as far as him taking over next year as the starter, but it seems like they're going to go back to the portal. They lose out on John Mateer to Oklahoma. That was an obvious one. Mateer's offensive coordinator from Washington State ended up at Oklahoma, so they stay together there. Mendoza, the Columbus kid from Cal, who had a good season, he's ending up at Indiana. Are there other names in the portal that you're hearing that Miami is going after? Are there guys you'd like to see them try and bring in, or are you comfortable if it ends up being Emery Williams?
I would be comfortable in giving Emery Williams a shot, and I'll explain why. In terms of other names, you mentioned a couple that Miami didn't land. Although I will say, I don't really think Miami made an offer for Fernando Mendoza. I think that they maybe had a conversation with him because he is a local, played at Miami Columbus. So you have the Cristobal tie-in, but I don't think Miami really pushed for Mendoza. I do think they pushed for Mateer, who ended up at Oklahoma. But the thing is, I think they're being very selective. I can understand going after a John Mateer because he would be an upgrade for most teams in the country. The guy is just absolutely dynamic. So, yeah, I mean, if you have an opportunity to get him, you shoot your shot. But I think Miami's being careful, and why I would be, unless somebody truly incredible becomes of it, there's some speculation that maybe Quinn Ewers could become available because they might nudge him out for Arch Manning if Ewers doesn't decide to go pro, that he could become available, like things like that. Otherwise, Josh, I think there would be consequences if they just go for portal quarterbacks for the sake of going for one, because the biggest knock against Emery Williams would be his lack of experience.
Right.
Right. Like that would be the reason, like you would be hesitant to go into a season with Emery Williams as your starter because he's only started 2 games 2 years ago, has barely played. But then the counter argument to that would be, well, how do you get experience if you never get a chance to play? Like if you go out and grab a portal quarterback every single year, how do you recruit quarterbacks out of high school after that? Because any, you know, negative recruiting is it like Miami can say all they want to high school quarterbacks. But, you know, when they're getting recruited by the Floridas and the Florida States, and understandably so, they're going to say, why would you go to Miami? Because they're going to grab they're going to recruit over you in the portal every single year. So I do think there is some value in and, you know, I'm not saying Emery Williams is Cam Ward. I mean, Cam Ward was generational. So my point is, unless you can find somebody like that, I would be very hesitant to take a portal quarterback every year because Emery Williams, he practices very well. His teammates really like him, and that's not just something they say in public. That's something they say in private as well. So, you know, I think he might, and I'm not saying just hand it to him because Miami also has Judd Anderson and Luke Nickel, who's won 2 straight state championships in Georgia. He's going to be coming in as a true freshman. Like, let them compete, whatever. But I think someone in their room may deserve this opportunity because I kind of fear the slippery slope of you bring in a transfer guy every single year. Why would any high school quarterback ever want to come here? That's the thing that I worry about.
It'll certainly be interesting to see how Mario Cristobal and the Canes address replacing Cam Ward. Not an easy guy to replace, and neither is Alex Dono. And I appreciate Dono for joining us here today, talking some Coach L, talking some Canes football. You can find the Locked On Canes podcast, Locked On ACC podcast, anywhere you get your podcast, including the Odyssey app. Dono, thanks so much for taking the time. I truly appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Steven. I'll see you guys all later.
Sounds good. More Hawk and Crowder coming up next.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
You smell that? You feel it?
What's that?
Hialeah.
Hawk and Crowder.